thanks for choosing this podcast. This is Coming Out Stories with me, Emma Goldswell. It's brought to you by What Goes On Media, and we bring you inspiring LGBT plus stories every fortnight. Hey, do follow us on Twitter. We are at Come Out Stories, and on Instagram via at Coming Out Stories Pod. Well, this episode, we are back in the States to meet Brad. He didn't come out until his 30s, by which stage he'd married a woman and had a child, and he's one of the few people that I've ever chatted to who opted to come out by sitting down and writing a good old-fashioned letter. Time to meet Brad.
You know, it's really hard for me to remember a time when I didn't know, even though I didn't know necessarily what it was. I mean, at my earliest age, I remember looking at other boys and thinking, he's cute, before I was 10. And then when I was probably around 10, I started to get a little bit of understanding. I'm the youngest of seven kids, so my older brother and sisters, I hardly remember them at home, if at all. So my sisters would bring their boyfriends or husbands to the house. And around 10, I guess I was lusting, even though I didn't know that was it was either, but I definitely was looking at them differently than I used to look at the cute boys. I would say that I probably knew 12-ish.
12-ish, okay. Did you have any relationships? Because I know you went on to live a straight life for quite a while, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I didn't have any relationships. Well, actually, my wife when I was in the 30s was the first relationship I had. I had tons of sex because I was in the closet that whole time up until the 30s. I did a lot of drinking and a lot of sex and kept it secret.
Let's give this a time and a place then. So what decade are we talking when you were sort of in your teenage years and whereabouts were you?
Okay, I was in North Carolina, so I was in the South where everything is about appearances. Now, my family is from the North, but still in my family, it was everything is about appearances. So even though there was never any discussion anti-gay, I just knew it was wrong, you know. I will say my mom probably knew. I'm sure you aren't familiar with Donahue, but it was a daytime talk show that we had here. And it was one of the earliest. And he frequently had gay people on. And it was in the 70s where they kind of were brought on almost like freaks. I mean, he wouldn't do that. He was very open-minded, but the audience was just terrible to them. But my mom and I would watch, and I would be so related to them, even though they were treated terribly. And actually, Victor Victoria, I remember watching that with my mother, and we laughed through the whole thing. So there was that connection. But beyond that, it was all secretive to me. In the area there, when I started school, it was overpopulated with people my age. So I had to start a year late. They kind of said A through M starts this year, and the rest of the alphabet you start next year, which meant my entire final year of high school, I was 18. So I was spending a lot of time in the video arcades and the adult bookstores. In fact, a few years later, I just recently had a meal with an old friend of mine from high school, and I said, you remember when you guys kind of thought I was never dated at all and probably were a virgin? I said, you know, the truth is I was probably having sex about 10 times more than you guys. Fortunately, you got a good laugh out of that.
So who were these sexual encounters with them? Was it other boys at your school, or how was this happening if it wasn't really talked about at school?
It was anonymous. It was all anonymous sex. It would be in video arcades where you leave the door open and somebody would come in and you would have sex. That was almost entirely it. I did have sex with one friend from high school, and I remember it being wonderful in the sense I was journaling at that time, and I remember writing in the journal that it didn't feel dirty. It just felt right. But that didn't change my attitude. I still thought, you know, this is wrong, and I can't come out. I will change someday. And a large part of my coming out was I kept telling myself, as long as it's only about sex, then I can get past this.
Was there any role models? Was there anybody that you knew when you were growing up that was gay? Any people around you?
No. None that were open. I did end up working in the hotel industry while I was still in North Carolina, and stereotypical, there were a lot of people that were gay in the hotel industry, but I never got close to any of them. it was a very strange period. It was during the AIDS crisis, but because I was in North Carolina and closeted, it was this thing that was going on elsewhere. There wasn't as much fear with me, but I also kind of knew that these people were afraid of it. It was a very awkward period.
So this was in the 1980s then, yeah?
Yes, yes. Oh, sure. And I will say, having acted out sexually, I mean, I was pretty crazy. And how I remained HIV negative is pure luck, pure luck.
So you weren't having safe sex?
No, oh, no, no, not whatsoever.
Well, I guess you wouldn't have had any education about that, would you?
No, no, actually it wasn't until probably the later 80s when they really were promoting condom use.
So was there any bullying at school? Did other kids pick up on the fact that you might be gay and try and other you and make you feel different?
Some did. I was never called any kind of gay slur. I think people just thought I was weird for the most part. I was a great manipulator. So in my school, it was kind of small. There were only 200 of us. And so the jocks got along with the heads who got along with the geeks, and we intermingled, but I was able to manipulate myself, manipulate things that my teachers loved me. I was president of the senior class. But at the same time, I felt totally like in a bubble because I wasn't the same. And I had this horrible thing that I had that I wanted to go away.
So you weren't a jock then? I imagine someone called Brad would have been a jock. I think here in the UK, we just hear the word Brad and we just imagine that you're like the sort of, the prom king or whatever they call them. And you are the popular guy. That's a Brad, in our opinion, I think.
Here in the US, there's two stereotypes with Brad on television and in the movies. They're either exactly like you described or a total geek or a villain. Soap operas are usually the villain.
Okay. So no bullying as such, but I guess you didn't feel comfortable enough to verbalise the fact that you were gay and having sexual encounters with men while you were at school? You didn't tell anyone?
No, I didn't tell a soul. I did not tell a soul in, oh my gosh, I would guess I was probably close to 30. I, at one time in North Carolina, had a roommate who was a lesbian, and we met in Kansas City, in the middle of the country one time, and she admitted to me that she was a lesbian, and I said, I know, because you and Hannah were side by side at all times. And I admitted to her I was gay, and she was shocked. Later, she talked to Hannah, who said, well, yeah, Brad was gay. He hooked up with one of the guys at the hotel where we worked, and he told everybody. So I wish I had known that, but I didn't.
So it was something that really wasn't talked about then?
No. It wasn't discussed at all. I would say in the hotel, we used to joke about gay people. It wasn't in a mean way. It's kind of the way gay people joke about it now. You're making fun of the stereotype. So it was kind of an acceptance, but making fun of the whole, probably the life that they lived. It wasn't like a mean attack. So that was as close to talking about LGBTQ people at all.
So how did you go from, all these different men to then marrying a woman? How did that come about?
Well, I decided there was a time that I needed to come out. I needed to come out, and I knew I couldn't do it. It was a mid-sized city in North Carolina. We did have a gay area, even though I had no idea where it was. And I decided I wanted to transfer, so I checked out some different cities to transfer to, and my top two choices was Boston or Atlanta, because I knew they had great gay communities, and I would finally be able to come out. So when it came time to transfer, I really can't explain it. I wound up transferring to Nebraska, and I still stayed very much in the closet out in farm country. And I was working, the company I worked for, I was still in the hotel industry, but I was no longer in the hotel. I was a trainer, and I was training this young woman who I can tell you 100% I am gay, but I can also tell you I did fall in love with her. I was madly in love with her.
So you never described yourself as bisexual then, or pansexual?
For a short time, when I first came out to her, and before I came out to her, I was seeing a therapist at the LGBT Center in Las Vegas, which it was almost a shack at that time, but they did have a grant to have a therapist on staff. And when I first came out, he said, boy, I think you're one of the few bisexual people I've ever known, but I'm not bisexual. I acted bisexually, but no.
But you managed to fall in love with a woman. That's quite interesting, isn't it? That you totally identify as gay now, but you did fall in love with one woman.
I did fall in love with one woman. We had so much in common. I mean, we were even born on the same day. And we were really good friends. And we had a lot of sex because even though I'm gay, you know what, guys? It still feels good. It's not the same connection that I have now, but it was good.
Gosh. And then you went on to have a family as well. So you went on to live a straight life, essentially.
Yes. We were married for 5 years, and in our third year of marriage, we consciously made a decision to have a kid. And I remember the day that we had unprotected sex to get her pregnant. And it's almost obvious that that was the day that it happened. But when she did the test and saw that she was pregnant, she immediately had to rush to work. And I sat on the bed, and I remember thinking to myself, oh my God, my life has changed. And I am really stuck in this life. This is it.
So it felt regretful.
Regretful and exciting at the same time. It's hard for me to say I have regrets because I do have this incredible young woman as my daughter, and she truly is one of the best people I ever met.
And how old is she now then?
She's 24.
Wow. She's got an interesting story to say about her parents then, hasn't she?
Yes. Actually, she actually went to university in your neck of the woods in Huddlesford, which I know is between...
Huddersfield?
Yeah, Huddersfield, which I know is between Manchester and Leeds.
Yeah, in Yorkshire, yep.
And she's now in Germany getting her master's. And she even spent internship in, I want to say, Lithuania to help them develop the first Baltic Pride. So I have a tremendous amount of pride in her for
That's amazing. Well, I guess she has to come out all the time as well and say that she's got a gay dad.
I think so. I don't know. I'm quite honest, because of the distance and other things, we weren't as close as I would like to be. We kind of became more close as adults. But when she was visiting my husband and I, and she showed me the Father's Day, it was Father's Day, and she showed me the card and it said, to my two dads, I said, oh my God, Maurice is going to love this. She goes, I know. So she gets it. She totally gets it.
She totally gets it. Wow. So you were married, though, for a few years. And to the outside world, you were living this nuclear family life and you were straight. And did that feel uncomfortable to you, or you were just happy to be in a relationship and have a child?
It was uncomfortable and comfortable at the same time. I really enjoyed my career was going great. It was prestigious and we had, you know, a nice house, and that was all good. And it was very domestic, which, you know, is the thing we're supposed to do. And so I felt good about that. But I also, my attraction towards men was just more and more and more greater. And so I did go to the Gay and Lesbian Center privately, and I started talking to this therapist. And I did end up joining a men's group, which was huge. It was absolutely huge men's group. And there were a lot of men in their 70s and 80s. And they all would tell me, basically, they waited till their wives died before they came out.
Wow.
And it was very sad. And I would ask them, you know, would you do that the same? And they're like, that's impossible to answer. It's a whole different world. But I knew I didn't want that to happen. I thought, what if she finds out when we're 70?
So she didn't know when you got together that you'd had all these men previously?
Oh, no. She knew I had a lot of sex, but assumed it was with women. Because she was very sexually active as well. So we joked around about that.
So she had no idea that she was getting into a relationship with a gay man?
None. Wow. It's funny that she said, after I did come out to her, a few days later she said, you know, I should have known, because you always put your hand over your mouth when you laugh and you like to drink frou-frou drinks.
Is that a sign? I don't think my gay dolls picked up on that previously.
And I also said, you know, you'll probably give me word in the future if you are attracted to a man and want to get in a relationship that this could happen again. And I said, so here's the secret. Watch his eyes. If you ever watched me in the mall, you would have known where my eyes were. And she said, thank you. That's very helpful to know.
Gosh. So there must have been a day where you had to come out to her then. You had to come out to your wife and say, actually, I'm more interested in men.
Yes, and I can tell you exactly how that happened. We lived in Las Vegas, and my wife and my daughter went back east to visit her family. And it happened to be the same exact weekend a man I knew in Phoenix was in Las Vegas for a bowling tournament. And he was openly gay, and he took me to gay bars throughout the city. We kind of bar hopped. And I had been in gay bars before, but I just kind of sat there, and it was kind of this creepy in the corner kind of thing, you know, kind of more like what people lived in the 50s, you know, this is seedy. This was the first time I was really out, and I experienced, I say it was the first time I experienced life as a gay man, and I never felt so alive. It was absolutely amazing. And I told myself just before she came back, I said, I don't think I'm ever, I can't go back to that. I can't go back to what I used to live. So one day I just said to her, I said, remember you had a dream about a friend of yours and that you had sex and you thought, gosh, I wonder if I'm a lesbian. You kind of brushed it off. Well, you know what? I kind of have those same dreams and they're kind of stronger than what you were having. And she said, are you saying you're gay? And yeah, she was devastated, of course. I worked in the hotel industry, so I went and checked into the hotel for the night. But she was also absolutely incredible. Now, it wasn't long after that that Las Vegas had a national coming out day celebration. They had a big fair almost. She took my daughter with me there.
And this was not long after he'd come out to her?
Not long after I came out. She's very wise, and it reminds me why I fell in love with her. What she said was, if we want our daughter to grow up and love and respect who she is, we have to do the same. And that's why I want her to learn.
She sounds like an incredible woman. I can see why I might be attracted to her.
Yes. And also, our divorce was very amicable. We wrote out a divorce agreement and gave it to the lawyer and said, write this on legalese, and that's what they did. And, you know, she said, you know, in certain circumstances, I probably would move away and never see you again, but our daughter, we're going to be connected the rest of our lives. So, you know what? We might as well be friends.
And you are.
Yep. things went sour and it had nothing to do with my being gay. There were other issues, but she was incredibly supportive.
Gosh, so she took it on the chin, basically, and accepted it and moved on and accepted a divorce.
Yeah, and I will say the one other incredible thing she said is, I know nobody else knows, and I'm going to let you do it on your time when you're ready. She told her family, but she didn't tell anyone in my family or my friends. She was the first person I really came out to, other than people that I had sex with and kind of developed friendships with, but not deep, lasting relationships.
So did you go on to tell your family?
I told my family long afterwards. I would say I told my family at least 10 to 15 years later.
Wow.
Yeah, I called some friends and told them, and they were all great. And I was thinking, how do I tell my family? There's 7 kids, and we all live in different states. And my dad lived in a different state, so there's 8 states. And I don't want to tell one and have it go through the grapevine. So I thought maybe I should write them all a letter. Probably going through the grapevine would have been easier for me, but I wrote a letter to each of them and I called a friend and said, what do you think of this idea? You know, I came out to you, and her response was, you know, I still love you, but when you told me, I had to worry about, you know, it's surprising, and I had to worry about how am I going to react? So I think if you wrote a letter, they don't have to worry about how they react in front of you. You know, give them time.
That's a very good point. I've not thought of that before. Yeah.
The sad thing is, even though they were very close now and they fully embrace who I am and they love my husband dearly, after I sent those letters, nobody contacted me for 1 year.
What?
Yeah.
A year,
yeah.
Brad.
A year.
That must have hurt, right?
It hurt tremendously. Unbelievable. And I wasn't getting along with my dad at the time, so I had no relationship with him. I will say the one odd thing is my ex-wife said that he told her, wow, that must have been really hard for Brad to have to keep that secret all those years, which is very odd that he would say that to her but would never have said that to me. And the only reason we got back together and I saw them was when my dad was dying and we all got down there. He was in South Carolina and we all got down there to be with him.
And what did they say to you then? Was it mentioned?
either nothing was said. I did learn that the reason why some did not reach out to me is they were mad at me, not upset that I was gay. They thought I should have waited till my dad died. And I was dumbfounded by that. In fact, I had lunch with one of my siblings one day, and I said, what was the deal with like that? And she said, you should have waited till dad died. And I said, first of all, if I wanted to hurt him, I didn't like dad, so I wouldn't have cared. But that wasn't the whole point of it. I want dad to know who I was before he died. And I can't believe you think there's anything wrong with that. And she said, well, I still think you should have waited. And I think several of them still think that way.
But there's seven of them, right? You've got seven siblings.
Yeah, there's five left, but the seven of total in the beginning.
But they all seem to think the same then. They all decided not to contact you, and they all decided that you'd done it too early. Even though you'd waited till you were 35.
Yeah, and they knew. I mean, for a while I lived 80 miles east of San Francisco, and I had family members come visit me, and I would go and spend time with them in San Francisco, and I kind of knew where things were a little more than they thought I would. And when I moved to LA, my brother came to visit me, and the house I was renting a room in had a rainbow flag out front, and my eventual partner lived in the guest house in the back, and the landlord said, I think Brad's out back. And so when he knocked on the door, my partner came out just wearing a towel and said, is that you, honey? So I found out about that later, but they kind of figured it out, yes. But again, it was never discussed. And my family was very much, we don't discuss things.
And so you did send the letter to your dad as well then, yeah?
Yes.
And he didn't respond either?
No. They all got the same letter, except the first paragraph was changed a little bit to make it more personal.
Gosh. And how long did it take you to craft that letter then? You must have thought about it quite a lot.
The writing the letter did not actually take that long. Mailing the letter took forever. And even when I finally got to the post office, I paced in the lobby of the post office. I would guess, no exaggeration, it was at least an hour before I finally went to the slot, threw them in, and said, to hell with it.
Gosh, I can just imagine the thoughts whirring through your head then.
Oh, I was terrified. But I also knew once it was in that slot, there was no turning back.
So you haven't mentioned your mum. Was she not around? Has she passed?
My mom died right after I was high school, about 2 years after I was in high school. So she died in 1984.
Yeah, so definitely wouldn't have got told then.
No. I wish that I could have told her. I think she would have been very loving about it, but didn't have that opportunity. I think she knew.
Do you? Well, mothers always do. I do find that. Well, I've spoken to a lot of people who tell their mothers, or their mothers basically got them to come out with it because they knew.
Yeah, they do say that. And like I said, we watched Victoria, and she and I were the only one that would talk openly about gay people, but it was never about me, but about them. Because that was still an era where people were just starting to accept gay people and see them more openly, maybe on TV shows and that sort of thing, even though they were usually the clown.
So you said you worked in the hotel industry, but what about other careers you've had? Did you feel like you were able to be out and proud at work, wherever you were?
Well, I stayed in the hotel industry for 20 years, and after I came out in Las Vegas, and then I transferred to a new office that the hotel company I worked with opened, the one that was 80 miles from San Francisco, and it was a great job, but my superior was openly gay. So I did very quickly come out to him, and eventually other people in the office, other executives in the office learned, and eventually it got down to my staff. And that was all okay. Everybody was cool with that. What's interesting is the other people higher up that were my level in the corporation throughout the country in different offices, they did not know. And how I came out to them was very funny. We were in Puerto Vallarta for a conference. And a group of us went, I shouldn't say it's a Mexican restaurant, let's say a local restaurant, because to them it's just food.
Correct.
We went to this restaurant, and we're doing lots of shots, and for people in the positions and ages that we were, we shouldn't have done it, but we started playing truth or dare, and it came up, somebody asked me, if you could have sex with anyone at this table, who would it be?
Oh, awful thing to play with colleagues.
Yes. And I looked at my boss, and he just shrugged and smiled at me like, it's up to you. And there was this guy from our Saudi Arabia office, of all things, who I thought was so hot. And I can't remember his name, but I said, him. And he backed up, shocked, and everybody was, you're gay? And I said, yeah, I am. I am. And then I got all the questions about, you know, how do you decide who's the man, who's the, you know, those kind of crazy questions that you get.
Straight yeah. Have a word.
Yeah. What's funny, the guy from Saudi Arabia, we ended up going to this, it was the big club in Puerto Vallarta. It's not there anymore. It was called Paco Paco, multi-level, packed. And we all went as a group. And I was the one he was going to be protected. Like, he was backed up against the bar and he was like, please, please help me. I don't want anybody grabbing my ass. I said, well, I think standing there at the bar, you kind of look unapproachable. I think you're fine.
Wow. But then you see, it sounds like you got your happy ending. You know, it sounds like you've had a lot of heartache with your family, but you found your true family and you met your happily ever after. You're now married, right?
Yeah, I went through a lot of bad eggs to get there, but it makes me really appreciate the man I've had. We've been together 18 years. We consider ourselves married 17 years, even though it wasn't legal at that time. We had a ceremony. We did, when it became legal, have a ceremony. I couldn't even tell you what that day is, and I don't care. To us, that was just a paper.
Oh, okay.
To get all the legal stuff, you know, the benefits that we should get. That first little ceremony that we had, that is our wedding day, and always will be.
Oh, how fabulous. How wonderful. So any advice to people listening to this who maybe have not made the brave move yet and come out to a partner or come out to family? Any advice about how to live your true life?
An important thing to me is when you come out, it has to be on your time. And don't feel pressured, but don't hold back either. Make sure it's just the right time. And I don't like the campaign, It Gets Better campaign. I do think for most of it, it does get better, but that implies, like, to me, as soon as somebody comes out, they're supposed to be expected, like, you know, rainbows and unicorns and life is great.
Oh, no, no.
And not everybody's in a safe environment that they can do that. And so I will say this, the best advice that I can give to somebody that has not come out, and especially if they're younger, I went to the LGBT center before I came out. It was one safe place I could go. I went to meetings. That really helped. But the Trevor Project is an organization that it's the one one of the few charities I give regularly money to. They are known for suicide hotline for LGBTQ kids. Mm-hmm. But they have an international organization, like 400,000 kids, that it's a network where they could still be in the closet, but online they can network you with each other. They can talk about, you know, wanting to come out. And it's just an incredible thing that they have. So if you want to come out, but you're afraid, there are resources there. And look for them and take advantage of those.
So kids in the UK could use this then, if it's about going.
Yes, they can. Yes, I made sure of that before I mentioned it.
Well, well said then, because I know very well about the Trevor Project, but I didn't realise that people across the world could access it as well. Because obviously there are plenty of charities and organisations within the UK which are excellent, but it's great to hear that there are some international ones as well. So wherever you are growing up or feeling isolated, you could access stuff. As long as you've got access to the internet, you can access like-minded people, right?
Exactly. I think their suicide hotline is US only, but the actual networking and that is global. I have one word that I use, a philosophy for everything, because coming out can be difficult. I'm going to toss it out there, even though it doesn't necessarily specifically have to do it. And I like to tell people that every morning is the opportunity to yell, do over.
Is the opportunity to what, sorry?
Say do over. I don't know if that's a term that you're used to.
No, I've not heard that one, no.
Or when you're a kid, when you're playing a game and you fail to catch a ball or whatever, you yell do over really quickly. And it doesn't count. You get to try again.
I like that.
Yeah. So if things go wrong, just get up in the morning and say, do over and go on from there.
Pick yourself up and start again.
Yeah.
For people that aren't aware, you are a podcaster as well. So just tell us very quickly about your podcast that people could access as well.
Absolutely. It's called Queer We Are. And I interview LGBTQ prominent individuals, entertainers, athletes, activists, and so on, and regular people. And it's all about success and how they got there. And the important thing is I try to make sure it's not a success or being true to yourself podcast in the sense of you can do it, or anything new age. It's just good conversation that I think anybody will find entertaining. But we do talk about how the individual got where they were and the obstacles they overcame. So that's a huge part of the conversation. And one important thing is money is not everyone's key to success. It can be some, and that's okay. So each individual is allowed to say what their definition of success is. Queer We Are. It's on every app or queerweare.com.
Cheers, Brad. So good to talk to you. And just to confirm, those details about the Trevor Project, you can access their website via thetrevorproject, all one word, .org, thetrevorproject.org. And there you can find loads of resources, actually, for all different types of support, whether you're worried about your sexuality, your gender identity, or your mental health in general. And you can find Brad's podcast by looking for Queer We Are wherever you get your podcasts, or simply go to queerweare.com. And please do that, because producer Sam and I have been interviewed for a recent episode. Now, we'll be releasing that right here by Coming Out Stories too. And do check it out, because you rarely get the chance to hear from producer Sam. Oh, and it's a really fun discussion, so do not miss it. Next episode, we're off down under to meet Clifford. He's from an Indian background and was brought up in Dubai, but now lives in Australia. He told me his parents took a while to understand what it meant to have a gay son.
So on the day, they were like, okay, that's okay. As they started processing it, they sort of went, well, you know, if it is something, we can try and fix it. And Dad was talking about, Dad mentioned once at least, I think, conversion therapy, and I let him at it. I know the research on it, but I let him sit with the idea because I knew that that's where how he was trying to process through it. They didn't know any gay person. So for them, this was like the first gay person that we know who's come out to us.